change that if they marched to the Capitol, and that they wouldn't have a country anymore if the president.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
President Trump watched it on
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
Orders to march to the Capitol to 4:17 p.m. when he finally, begrudgingly, told his supporters to go home. For 187 minutes, he actively disregarded his constitutional obligation to take care that the laws are faithfully executed. As we've established through months of investigation, that is because the mob wanted what President Trump wanted, to impede the peaceful transition of power. These are the Select Committee's findings about President Trump's dereliction of duty. From the outset of the violence, and for several hours that followed, people at the Capitol, people inside President Trump's administration, elected officials of both parties, members of President Trump's own family, and even Fox News commentators who were sympathetic to President Trump, all tried to contact the White House to urge him to do one singular thing, the one thing that all of these people immediately understood was required: instruct his supporters to leave the Capitol. The president repeatedly refused pleas as he watched the violence at the Capitol on television. During the day, the president never spoke with National Guard, the Department of Defense, the Department of Justice, or any law enforcement agency. At no point during the day, or any other, did he issue any order to deploy any law enforcement agency to assist. Multiple witnesses, including President Trump's White House counsel, testified to these facts. Your White House employees, who had been speaking directly with President Trump, state that he didn't want anything done. The president was making phone calls that afternoon, but they weren't to law enforcement officials. Rather, President Trump continued to call his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Both President Trump and Mr. Giuliani spoke with congressional leaders, even after the violence had begun, to encourage them to continue delaying the session. Approximately 3 hours after being informed of the violence at the Capitol, hours during which, as our evidence has shown, Donald Trump sat in his dining room and watched the violence on television, the president released a video statement in which he again repeated that the election was stolen, told his supporters at the Capitol that he loved them, and ultimately suggested that they disperse. The statement had an immediate impact on elements of the crowd, many of whom who have testified that it led them to depart the Capitol. At 6:01 p.m., President Trump sent his last tweet of the day. He did not condemn the violence. Instead, he attempted to justify it. These are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away, he wrote. Remember this day forever. There's no doubt that President Trump thought that the actions of the rioters were justified. In the days after January 6th, he spoke to several different advisors. And in those conversations, he minimized the seriousness of the attack. Here's new testimony from another one of President Sr.'s advisors, Kellyanne Conway.
You said you talked to the president the next day. Tell us about that conversation on the 7th.
Yeah, I don't think it was very long. I just said that was just a terrible day. I'm working on a long statement. I said it's crazy.
What did he say?
No, these people are upset. They're very upset.
In the days following the attack, President Trump also expressed a desire to pardon those involved in the attack. Since then, he's suggested that he will do so if he returns to the Oval Office. In summary, President Trump lit the flame, he poured gasoline on the fire, and sat by in the White House dining room for hours watching the fire burn. And today, he still continues to fan those flames. That was his extreme dereliction of duty. Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Gentlewoman yields back. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Maryland, Mr. Raskin, for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank you for your extraordinary leadership of this committee. Generations to come will praise you and the vice chair for your unswerving devotion to the rule of law. Several months ago, you tasked several of our members in a subcommittee with bringing recommendations to the full committee about potential referrals to the Department of Justice and other authorities based on evidence of criminal and civil offenses that has come to our attention over the course of our investigation. We are now prepared to share those recommendations today. Mr. Chairman, let me begin with some relevant background considerations to our criminal referrals. The dangerous assault on American constitutional democracy that took place on January 6, 2021, consists of hundreds of individual criminal offenses. Most such crimes are already being prosecuted by the Department of Justice. We propose to the committee advancing referrals where the gravity of the specific offense, the severity of its actual harm, and the centrality of the offender to the overall design of the unlawful scheme to overthrow the election compel us to speak. Ours is not a system of justice where foot soldiers go to jail and the masterminds and ringleaders get a free pass. Mr. Chairman, as you know, our committee had the opportunity last spring to present much of our evidence to a federal judge, something that distinguishes our investigation from any other congressional investigation I can recall. In the context of resolving evidentiary privilege issues related to the crime fraud doctrine in the Eastman case, U.S. District Court Judge David Carter examined just a small subset of our evidence to determine whether it showed the likely commission of a federal offense. The judge concluded that both former President Donald Trump and John Eastman likely violated two federal criminal statutes. This is the starting point for our analysis today. The first criminal statute we invoke for referral, therefore, is Title 18, Section 1512C, which makes it unlawful for anyone to corruptly obstruct, influence, or impede any official proceeding of the United States government. We believe that the evidence described by my colleagues today and assembled throughout our hearings warrants a criminal referral of former President Donald J. Trump, John Eastman, and others for violations of this statute. The whole purpose and obvious effect of Trump's scheme were to obstruct, influence, and impede this official proceeding, the central moment for the lawful transfer of power in the United States. Second, we believe that there is more than sufficient evidence to refer former President Donald J. Trump, John Eastman, and others for violating Title 18, Section 371. This statute makes it a crime to conspire to defraud the United States. In other words, to make an agreement to impair, obstruct, or defeat the lawful functions of the United States government by deceitful or dishonest means. Former President Trump did not engage in a plan to defraud the United States acting alone. He entered into agreements, formal and informal, with several other individuals who assisted him with his criminal objectives. Our report describes in detail the actions of numerous co-conspirators who agreed with and participated in Trump's plan to impair, obstruct, and defeat the certification of President Biden's electoral victory. That said, the subcommittee does not attempt to determine all of the potential participants in this conspiracy, as our understanding of the role of many individuals may be incomplete even today because they refuse to answer our questions. We trust that the Department of Justice will be able to form a far more complete picture through its own investigation. Third, we make a referral based on Title 18, Section 1001, which makes it unlawful to knowingly and willfully make materially false statements to the federal government. The evidence clearly suggests that President Trump conspired with others to submit slates of fake electors to Congress and the National Archives. We believe that this evidence we set forth in our report is more than sufficient for a criminal referral of former President Donald J. Trump and others in connection with this offense. As before, we don't try to determine all of the participants in this conspiracy, many of whom refuse to answer our questions while under oath. We trust that the Department of Justice will be able to form a more complete picture through its own investigation. The fourth and final statute we invoke for referral is Title 18, Section 2383. The statute applies to anyone who incites, assists, or engages in insurrection against the United States of America, and anyone who gives aid or comfort to an insurrection. An insurrection is a rebellion against the authority of the United States. It is a grave federal offense, anchored in the Constitution itself, which repeatedly opposes insurrections and domestic violence, and indeed uses participation in insurrection by office holders as automatic grounds for disqualification from ever holding public office again at the federal or state level. Anyone who incites others to engage in rebelling, assists them in doing so, or gives aid and comfort to those engaged in insurrection is guilty of a federal crime. The committee believes that more than sufficient evidence exists for a criminal referral of former President Trump for assisting or aiding and comforting those at the Capitol who engaged in a violent attack on the United States. The committee has developed significant evidence that President Trump intended to disrupt the peaceful transition of power under our Constitution. The president has an affirmative and primary constitutional duty to act to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Nothing could be a greater betrayal of this duty than to assist in insurrection against the constitutional order. The complete factual basis for this referral is set forth in detail throughout our report. These are not the only statutes that are potentially relevant to President Trump's conduct related to the 2020 election. Depending on evidence developed by the Department of Justice, the president's actions could certainly trigger other criminal violations. Nor are President Trump and his immediate team the only people identified for referrals in our report. As part of our investigation, we asked multiple members of Congress to speak with us about issues critical to our understanding of this attack on the 2020 election and our system of constitutional democracy. None agreed to provide that essential information. As a result, we took the significant step of issuing them subpoenas based on the volume of information particular members possessed about one or more parts of President Trump's plans to overturn the election. None of the subpoenaed members complied, and we are now referring four members of Congress for appropriate sanction by the House Ethics Committee for failure to comply with lawful subpoenas. Mr. Chairman, we understand the gravity of each and every referral we are making today, just as we understand the magnitude of the crime against democracy that we describe in our report. But we have gone where the facts and the law lead us, and inescapably, they lead us here. Accordingly, Mr. Chairman, in light of these facts, I ask unanimous consent that the chairman be directed to transmit to the United States Department of Justice relevant select committee records in furtherance of these criminal referrals.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I now yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Pursuant to notice, I now call up Select Committee's final report pursuant to Section 4A of House Resolution 503. The clerk shall designate the report.
Final report of the Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol.
Without objection, the report will be considered read and open to amendment at this point. I now recognize the gentlewoman from Virginia, Ms. Luria, for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee favorably report to the House the Select Committee's final report, which includes the committee's legislative recommendations and criminal referrals of Donald J. Trump and others. pursuant to Section 4A of House Resolution 503.
The question is on the motion to favorably report to the House. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it.
Mr. Chairman, I request a recorded vote.
A recorded vote is requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Cheney?
Aye.
Ms. Cheney, aye. Ms. Lofgren?
Aye.
Ms. Lofgren, aye. Mr. Schiff?
Aye.
Mr. Schiff, aye. Mr. Aguilar?
Aye.
Mr. Aguilar, aye. Mrs. Murphy?
Aye.
Mrs. Murphy, aye. Mr. Raskin?
Aye.
Mr. Raskin, aye. Mrs. Luria?
Aye.
Mrs. Luria, aye. Mr. Kinzinger?
Kinzinger, aye.
Mr. Kinzinger, aye.
How is the chair recorded?
Mr. Chairman, you are not recorded.
Chair votes aye.
Mr. Chairman, aye.
The clerk will report the vote.
Mr. Chairman, on this vote, there are 9 ayes and 0 noes.
The motion is agreed to. Without objection, a motion to reconsider is laid on the table. Without objection, staff is authorized to make any necessary technical or conforming changes to the report to reflect the actions of the committee. The chair requests those in the hearing room remain seated until the Capitol Police have escorted members from the room. There being no further business, without objection, the select committee stands adjourned.
We have just witnessed an extraordinary moment.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in 1,000 pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey sis, missed you this morning. Kim told me you weren't feeling well, so I'm just doing a self-care check.
Ah, thank you, friend.
How you doing?
Girl, listen, my energy was so low because I didn't eat breakfast when I got up, so I had to miss virtual yoga with y'all.
Trust me, I understand.
But I'm doing much better now that I've eaten, so I'm back on track.
Great. In that case, let's get some steps in tonight. I'll come over and we can walk around the lake.
Sounds good. Appreciate you being in my business, too. Now, let me get in yours. Did you check your blood pressure today?
I did that and my squats, okay?
Okay.
High blood pressure is not going to be my friend if I can help it. See you at 6?
Let's get it. See you then.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Check in on one another and be a part of a healthy blood pressure movement. Rally Your Squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
With Kristen Bry, we are coming back at you live after the live broadcast of, I guess, what was shorter than maybe we were expecting of the final January 6th hearing. We are joined by Jane Matinere, Brian Kelly, and our special guest to make sense of it all, political strategist, Democratic extraordinaire, Joseph Pecky. Telling us what it all means. I haven't seen you since I got back, so I'm happy to have you on the show. And this feels like a very primed reason to have you back on.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I thought I got a failing grade in absentia because I realized that you had one of the other guest hosts who filled in when you were on your honeymoon back last week to sit in, and somebody else told me that. I had to go, well, I wasn't asked. I guess I didn't do a very good job. I'm so sorry I let you down, boss.
No, not at all. That's a whole different thing. It was only because he had texted me literally as I knew that I needed someone to cover for me for Monday. So it was more that he was the first person to reach out. But you were excellent. So you were. We will definitely have you back. But hopefully, I won't have to actually miss any shows for a while because I've missed a lot over the last 6 weeks. But all right, so let's.
And you and Jane are both 100%. You're feeling great.
Well, Jane's technically still positive, so she's sitting here with her mask on. But
otherwise, I feel good.
But she feels good, and so. But let's cut to the chase. So was this? What's your one word to sum up what we just watched?
Historic.
Oh. Jane, what's your one word?
Disappointing.
Brian, what's your one word?
Eh.
So, Joe, since you have the most dramatic word to describe what we just saw, what do you interpret the summation of what they showed with the 12-minute clip of all of the things that we've seen play out over the last 8 months? And then the final, obviously, the vote that was unanimous.
Yeah, so because there is a special counsel that has been named by the Department of Justice, because we know that there are investigations underway into the potential criminal conduct around January 6th already, I do not think that today's hearing or the January 6th committee vote or the conduct of or the report really will have any immediate short-term impact, right? We don't have, like, the elections are over. The wheels of justice are turning. I think that what today was ultimately about was for the history books, for 25, 50, 100 years from now, to be able to say that Congress took an extraordinary action to stand up for itself. That's the ultimate takeaway, because I think anyone who is paying attention understands that there is going to be accountability for the January 6th of it all. We're seeing that among what they refer to today as the foot soldiers. We are starting to see it with sort of higher profile individuals feeling the heat. We know that all of these different investigations are going to wrap up at some point. If you fast forward 6 months or a year and all of that has happened and it turns out that there is criminal or civil liability for the events of that day, and Congress had not passed a criminal referral off to the Justice Department, they would look diminished in the eyes of history. They would look not serious or not capable at this hour in our country's history of rising to meet the moment. So I really think that today was about, first and foremost, history and the history books, as opposed to any immediate implication that it's going to have.
Well, and that was kind of as I was sitting here watching it and realizing how much, and I think they did a good job as far as what Jane and I talked about in the first hour of today's show was, it's been a long time. And in a society where we have short memories and fast news cycles, and as you said, so much of the rhetoric around the January 6th hearings was, what impact is it going to have in the midterms? And now the midterms are over, and we saw, you know, arguably what impact they did have, because it was the red wave that didn't. And kind of coming in today, I was like, well, what could they reveal anything? Could there be any kind of splashy fireworks, either figurative or
some big reveal,
figurative or literal big reveal. And it doesn't seem like we did that, but I think you're right. You're right. It's historic in that this has not happened. And so where it goes from here is up to the special counsel, right?
Yes. And listen, I think it's also historic insofar as they had to tie this off. They had to get this done with enough days to go before the new Congress begins that they can literally print the formal documents. Now, listen, I understand that I am not every American. I am a nerdy American. I am a history dork American. I own hard copies of the 9/11 Commission report and of the Iraq Study Group report. These are important historical documents. And by virtue of bringing this to a close 13 or 14 days before the new Congress, I'm sure one of the things that's happening right now is they're hitting transmit on a document to be printed off. And, you know, tens of thousands of copies of the books and all of this are going to be hitting your bookshelves before the new Republican Congress can put a stop to that. And I'm actually now just seeing they mentioned four members of Congress that they're referring to the Ethics Committee. One of them is the presumptive Speaker of the House. Kevin McCarthy is one of the four members that they're referring for ethics investigation.
Well, actually were talking about that at the beginning. There's six different publishers who have said that they're going to publish the findings or the entire report. And we were joking that will it sell out as fast as Trump's NFTs? and maybe it'll sell out faster if you dangle the chance to win a dinner with Liz Cheney. But it sounds like you will be buying it either way.
I will, and I should add, I also have the Mueller report. Trying to remember, I don't know if I still have my copy of the Deficit Reduction Committee during the Obama administration, but I try to keep the printers and the bookstores in business.
How long does it take you to actually read these whole things when you get them?
It takes a minute.
Yeah.
They're pretty dry. I think the 9/11 Commission report is the most, the easiest read. But they are all very important reads.
Absolutely.
And honestly, they're helpful to refer back to. I mean, I've done work for clients and found myself referring back to the 9/11 Commission report, you know, citing chapter and verse and making sure that it was, you know, being used appropriately in materials. So there's value.
There you go. See, Jane said she's going to buy it.
But I was hoping, Joe, that it would be not novel-like, but certainly not quite as dry reading like a legal brief.
Well, what I will say is I don't think it's going to read like a Robert Ludlum or Tom Clancy novel.
They didn't have enough time.
But I also think it's going to be less legalistic and easier to read and digest than, for example, the Mueller report. That one was really, really a lot of legalese. That was a tough one to just read, to pick up and read, you know, sitting on the couch at the end of the day.
So any other big takeaways from today or what you think people should, can you stick with us for the next segment? Because
yep.
I'd actually love to talk about not only just what happened on the broadcast and in the hearing, but also what was happening or wasn't happening on Twitter. And I'd love to get your two cents on that. And so I want you to stick through the break, but before we go to break, anything else you think people should take away from what we just watched?
Congress should work more like the January 6th committee did more often, with just the way that they were able to put this committee together, bipartisan, not just have the 5-minute speechifications. It was an example of, and hopefully a model for congressional committees into the future.
Awesome. All right. Well, Joe Speck is going to be here when we come back. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Tell me it's the institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News special report. The House committee investigating the Capitol riot is holding its final meeting today, calling January 6th an attempted coup by former President Trump. Committee Chair Benny Thompson.
He lost the 2020 election and knew it. But he chose to try to stay in office through a multi-part scheme to overturn the results and block the transfer of power.
CBS's Scott McFarlane.
A criminal referral, though, is not binding on the Justice Department. It's just that, a recommendation. But this weekend, committee member Adam Schiff argued there is enough evidence to warrant charges, enough evidence to charge Donald Trump.
But Republicans are expected to respond soon. CBS's Deborah Alfarone.
Most Republicans are standing by the former president, calling the House Select Committee's work partisan. They're also preparing a more than 100-page rebuttal to the committee's report.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Monica Ricks.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The New York University Law School last week published a case study exploring the different Wisconsin laws fake Trump electors may have broken after the 2020 election. The report listed five different charges State Attorney General Josh Call could pursue, including forgery, falsely assuming to act as a public officer, and misconduct in public office. Call tells Channel 27 in Madison he's aware of that report, but that he'll wait until after the federal investigation is over before deciding to pursue any state charges. We're keeping an eye on the potential for a winter storm that could complicate people's holiday travel plans. The storm could start Wednesday night and last into Friday. After that, temperatures are forecast to plunge into highs in the single digits into the Christmas holiday weekend. In sports, the Packers host the Rams tonight. The Bucks are at New Orleans. You're listening to The Shop, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the Civil Engineers. Linda and the Zeros. Groove Machine. Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this Civic Media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
I grew up hearing that women are bad with money, but I pay bills and take care of my family, so I'm pretty good with money. And now I'm taking control of my financial future by saving for retirement. Jumpstart your retirement savings at WeSaySaveIt.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
With Kristen Bry. If you missed any part of today's show, you can always listen to the podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or Apple or Spotify. You're welcome to join the conversation, 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. We are joined by campaign veteran, Democratic strategist, friend of the show, Joe Zepecki, who joined us to make sense of it all since we just got done with the final January 6th hearing. And one of the things I typically do or have done during these hearings is have Twitter up and following the multiple journalists, strategists who live tweet and kind of make sense of it in real time for me. Because as much as Benny Thompson is riveting sometimes, having people who can translate it is important. And one of the things I realized today, for the first time out of the other nine hearings, is that January 6th was not trending on Twitter at all. And obviously the things on your Twitter of like what's happening now are kind of curated for you, which makes me think that every time previously when it was streamed live on Twitter, the hearing itself. And today, the thing that was at the top of the What's Happening tab was NFL scores. And yeah, so that was a change.
Yeah, the way I think of that is, so sometimes you want a little more spicier salsa than Benny Thompson. Is that what I'm taking away from this?
I bet in after hours he's pretty spicy.
Just, I'm sure he is
his professional side and his party side.
Yeah, I think everybody is supposed to, these are supposed to be tuned to our interests and to get engagement, right? So like my Twitter feed basically boils down to like four things: politics, sports, nerd culture, and general news, right? Like there's not a TV station in the state of Wisconsin that I don't follow for news. Mm-hmm. And so what I am just noticing is that in the past hearings, there was like literal, like the live tweeting from the journalists, because the vast majority of people that I follow are journalists. Mm-hmm. And today we're getting a mix of, you know, Home Alone, pizza orders and inflation. Here's one from a reporter about January 6th. Here's one about an announcement on Disney. So something is happening, whether mm-hmm. that's with the algorithm or if we have seen enough journalists have already left the platform or are engaging with it less for their work because of everything that is happening at Twitter, up to and including Elon Musk's decision last week to suspend without any warning journalists for doing their jobs. So clearly something, we know that things have changed with Twitter since the ownership change. But you're right to point out that this is a pretty jarring one, because we've been through this with these January 6th committee hearings a couple of different times in the not too distant future. And it is a very different world today than it was even the last time.
Well, and one of them that I usually follow is Seth Abramson. And he just said, I'm not live tweeting today. And I think he didn't even.
Know. There you go. So
I mean, he just said it. He's like, because that was certainly one of the ones that I have been following. And he just said, "I'm sorry. Like, I'm not risking it. Please don't kick me off." And that's the amount of things that I've seen right now. Because I mean, on top of last week when the journalists who had reported on public information of Elon Musk's private jet got kicked off or suspended, some of them are back. But then yesterday, there was the announcements that if you promote other social media accounts, your Twitter account will be suspended. So journalists who have now left or are trying to do their work on different platforms are nervous about even sending people to those platforms. And because what I didn't realize, except for a text that I got from a friend while we were on air and while the podcast was happening, is in competition to the January 6th hearing today, they also dropped the next Twitter files. So that was also happening. Another installment of Hunter Biden's laptop and how the FBI did or did not handle their having it. And I have not even read what it says, but that was happening in the same time that the hearings were happening. And so it's wildly disappointing because I'm like you. I was not, before I started As Goes Wisconsin, I was not a huge Twitter user. And it was in finding the niche of Wisconsin news that Twitter became more manageable, of like curating it to what I wanted to see and who I wanted to engage with. And it's wildly disappointing to think that that's going to disappear. And even with the Hive and Post News and Mastodon and stuff, like all of that just seems very daunting to recreate and find another place to curate information and to have the conversation with other journalists and Wisconsin folks of what I created there. And this just, it feels like another example of it's falling apart.
Kristen, I would just say, don't cry because it's over. Cry because it happened. And I'm looking at three tweets in a row right now that are like the perfect illustration of the state of the world. We've got Snoop Dogg polling, should I run Twitter? 2.6 million votes and he's winning 80-20. Then you've got someone who's Uncle Mom, and it says, "My son got a face tattoo. Go ahead and bottle feed. It doesn't matter." And then you have
that's pretty funny, actually.
An open source intelligence. It is an open source intelligence agency that I follow, Intel Doge, saying the House committee has voted to refer Donald Trump to the Department of Justice. If that's not like the world in a snapshot, I don't know what is. Twitter was a great run for a long time.
It was
maybe
a great
if Snoop
run.
Dogg takes over. It'll go back.
Well, that's the thing. Like, simultaneously, TikTok is like a week away from getting banned potentially. And so the recreation of where we join each other online and get new information or share information is a revolving door. But I just thought that was interesting.
And you know what?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I know that for the creators out there, the end of social media would be like, it would be really, really sad and really, really hard to take. But I'm just here to tell you, if you really like detach yourself and go, would the world be a better or worse place without social media? My conclusion is it would be a better place without social media.
I push back on that only.
Hot take, I know.
No, I don't disagree with you because I think there is plenty of studies and what social media does to our mental health, what social media does to mis and disinformation. My only argument for social media as a creative person is it lowers the barrier to entry to things that were gated and kept. And you didn't, I quit acting because I didn't want to constantly be waiting for someone to tell me that I could. Right. And with, yeah. I kind of missed the initial YouTube phase. Like I was quitting acting right as YouTube became a thing. And that was kind of the first wave of people being able to take their creativity into their own hands. And it was a meritocracy. It was one of the first things that if you were good, if you were entertaining, things could go viral. You could get traction by putting your stuff out into the world and letting people share it. Like, As Goes Wisconsin would not be a thing without social media. Like, I couldn't have just moved back to Wisconsin and knocked on Journal Sentinel's door and, like, hire me to do videos for you, right? And so I hear you, and I don't disagree that they're reining it in somewhat is good. And it's also one of the best ways that we've allowed creativity to flourish and not had the people at the top who are usually business people, not creatives, saying who can and who cannot make it, quote unquote. This took a turn.
that's fair. And listen, out of everything that you would, right, it's a choice. It's a judgment call. I'm not saying there, if you could snap your fingers and eliminate all social media, I'm not saying there wouldn't be a downside to it. I'm saying that the upside would outweigh the downside.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, while we have you, I would love to get your thoughts on different news of the day, considering Jane and I were out all last week. But any thoughts? Because we started some of the headlines earlier today. I was first shocked when I heard that whoever holds the chair of the Wisconsin Republican Party didn't get paid until now. So we talked about that 2 weeks ago. But while we were gone, they have elected a new chair, Brian Schimming. Do you have thoughts on that move?
Yeah, so I'll provide a little historical context, which is I'm old enough and have been doing this long enough to remember when the Democratic Party of Wisconsin made paying the chair the way that it was done. And it was not without controversy at that time. And frankly, I think Republicans kind of, you know, they gotta pay somebody. But here we are. After 16, you know, in the last 16 statewide elections, and Democrats or the candidates supported by Democrats have won 13 of them, and our politics has evolved, you frankly see the Republican Party realizing, oh man, we got to figure this out and do some of this differently. So I'm not surprised by it. I'm also not worried by it. from the standpoint of winning elections. I mm-hmm. think that the Republican Party's problems run deeper than just their staff. I have certainly enjoyed watching the sniping between Tim Michaels and the Republican establishment. The Republicans are a party divided, and parties divided do not do as well politically as those that are united. And whether it's the fight over what their party infrastructure looks like, whether it is the rift between the Walker Clayfish wing and the Michaels wing of the Republican parties who are lining up behind Dan Kelly and Judge Doro. Doro?
I think it's
still
Doro.
Don't know how to say that
I think
one.
We decided that it was Doro.
Doro. Okay. So the Republicans have a lot of problems. Donald Trump is one of them, right? So, like, it's great that they have finally caught up and are trying to professionalize their party. I actually hope that professionalizing their party will lead to better outcomes in terms of the types of candidates they get. I know Brian Schimming. Brian's a good man. We disagree on basically everything, but we can have a disagreement agreeably. I'm hopeful forever that the Republican Party will figure out how to extract itself from the morass of the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. Well, and you brought up...
But it's not going to happen overnight.
Exactly. But you brought up... I'm sure we'll have you on plenty in the next 3 months, 4 months to talk about the Supreme Court race because it's so important. But since we haven't talked to you, kind of... I don't know enough how this goes. In the 2020 election, were there multiple candidates going into the primary for the Supreme Court seat?
I don't think there were in 2020, but there have been competitive primaries before where you basically had it was either Dalit or Neubauer. There was a primary with an attorney very much from like the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party. So we have seen these multi-candidate party, you know, primaries before. And frankly, I'm not entirely sure that on the progressive side, you know, the two progressive candidates who are running right now are Judge Janet Protasevich and Judge Everett Mitchell. I'm not sure that both of them will file nomination papers, right?
Oh, really?
It is within the realm of possibility. Oh, sure. That the Democrats and the progressive movement will find a way to sort of coalesce and pick a horse in the next couple of weeks. And if either one of those candidates does not turn in nomination signatures when they're due on the second or third, then they wouldn't be on the ballot.
The second or third of January?
Long ways to go. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So that's coming up fast. So we'll come back right after the holiday and know what the final horse race will be for that. Because that's fascinating to me in this very partisan but nonpartisan race, how the strategy lies there. All right. Well, Joseph Pecky, we're going to have you back in studio very soon. You always bring so much wisdom, enlightenment, history, hot takes. We appreciate you, man. And we'll see you next time.
Miss you guys. Glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. All right. We're going to take one more break. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation with I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 24 this afternoon. Under cloudy skies, southerly winds around 5 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Chance for snow showers. Lows dip down to about 18. Cloudy skies tomorrow. A few flurries possible at times. Daytime highs approaching 27. About an inch of snow Wednesday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 18 degrees.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. It has been a topsy-turvy show, started strong, took a break for the January 6th committee. We didn't know how long that was going to last. Joe Zepecki joined. And now we're going to round up the show with Jane Matinere, Brian Kelly. How you doing, Brian?
I'm conscious.
It's always a good place to be.
Let's just say they ended a little bit sooner than
we thought they were going to, which perhaps, is fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Totally fine.
We're improv artists.
Totally fine. That's what I'm down for. It's just exactly. There's certain things I have to do to make the salami work.
Well, Jane, you brought up an interesting point at the commercial that I hadn't thought of.
Did you catch this, Brian? When Representative Zoe Lofgren was speaking, she said at one point, and I'm paraphrasing here, but there were some lawyers, and it was unclear who was paying these lawyers. There were some lawyers for some of the witnesses, who were all predominantly from the Trump administration, who were advising at least one client. You know, you don't necessarily have to tell them all the things that you remember. And if you don't remember a couple things, there could be a really good job in your future that would be very financially lucrative. Is that pretty close, Brian?
Yeah. And you know what? If I ever had that job, I would not want to have that job, because then what else do I have to do after that? My goodness.
Doesn't it seem a little mobby?
It seems a little mobby, and it seems like it's not going to stop there.
You know what's fascinating? Did either of you listen to Ultra, Rachel Maddow's? Well, Jane doesn't listen to podcasts, so no. Do you know what I'm talking about, Ryan?
I did not, and I do not.
So I highly recommend it. It's Rachel Maddow, of who we all know, and she did a very produced historical podcast documentary type 8-part series. And it basically documents or rehashes or brings back there was a whole coup. There was a whole infiltration of Nazis and an attempt to overthrow the government in the lead up of World War II. And it's been so suppressed, that story of the politicians who were involved, the relationships with literal German Nazis and how they were trying to spread propaganda, and the foot soldiers and the different America First type groups that existed back then. It's such a mirror to what I feel like we've heard play out through Trump and the insurrection and January 6th and the committees afterwards. And it just, I think, as Joe was saying, this is historic, and there is a bookend now to what the testimony they heard, the subpoenas that they had, everything that they found, and it will be published for history for us to be able to reference back to and not forget. And I think,
but that doesn't mean that there will be any ramifications from it.
Well, we don't know yet.
Well, true, but there is no guarantee that any of these recommendations to the Department of Justice are going to go forward. There's no guarantee that anything is going to happen to any of these people. And now apparently we do know the four that have been recommended for ethics violations.
Which are?
Kevin McCarthy, Jim Jordan, Andy Biggs, and I'm forgetting.
John Eastman?
No, not John Eastman. He's not a member of the.
What did John Eastman get recommended for?
He's an attorney.
No, I know, but I saw one of the charges they were recommending John Eastman
for him. But these are just So they refused to comply with the subpoenas. So they are being recommended to the Ethics Committee for sanctions. Well, what does that mean?
What does it mean?
What, are you going to not get a sucker on Friday? I mean, what? It just seems toothless.
Well, it also just comes back to where we said, what we said at the beginning of the show, where it feels the fact that there's been so many convictions of quote unquote foot soldiers,
right,
for lack of a better term, people who were not elected officials that took part in January 6th, who have been charged with a variety of different, depending on what their involvement. But there's been hundreds, right, at this point?
There's been over 900.
Over 900. So there's justice and accountability for the average Joe, if you want to call them that. I'm not sure the founder of the Oath Keepers is necessarily an average Joe, but you know what I mean, versus the accountability for the people who were orchestrating things from the inside and knew, as we heard from the testimony, that Donald Trump lost the election. Everyone around him was telling him, you lost the election.
Yes.
And he wouldn't move forward. And to think, like you said, if there's not going to be any ramifications for the actual, the people in charge versus the people who were just now sitting in jail and will serve their sentence, but we're kind of just following orders. And if that means that there's still so much loyalty to these people when they've just done nothing except thrown the most vulnerable people out to serve their sentence, it'll be beyond disappointing.
It will. It really will. Again, to not see any accountability, just look at the texts that some of these lawmakers were sending to the chief of staff, Mark Meadows. And, you know, I can't think of the man who said it at the time, but when Trump at that point refused to concede and someone said, oh, just give it a couple weeks, he's just having a hard time, you know, just give it a couple weeks and he'll pack up and he'll go home. All those people knew this was mm-hmm. all a lie. They all fed this. They all encouraged this. They coddled this. And if there isn't going to be any comeuppance, I don't know that people will. How are you going to feel about that going forward?
You think it's any does worse than you do
work?
Now?
Does it? But does our system really work then?
Well, it potentially continues to work for the people it's meant to work for.
I guess. I don't think I'm those people.
I don't think I'm those people either. Hmm. This is why I'm a law-abiding citizen. All right. Well, Brian, what do you and Luke have coming up on Dueling Tangents?
Well, I think I heard that there was this January 6th committee hearing that happened. I think we may be covering that just a little bit. That definitely will be a subject that we bring up. Also, it will be whatever Luke is coming up with right now, because right now I am also producing your show as well as reprogramming the next hour. So it's going to be
Kelly,
pretty cool.
He does it all.
Many talents, many skills. We appreciate you, man. All right. Well, for us, that'll do it for today. But we will be back with a full show for tomorrow. As always, thank you for tuning in. Come back tomorrow. This has been As Goes Wisconsin. I'm the man.
Mental health challenges impact us all in some way. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services is working hard to meet these challenges, ushering a new model of mental health care, redesigned with you in mind. This community-based system meets people where they're at, with culturally competent services, better access, and no wrong doors to begin the journey. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services, here for you, close to home. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health emergency, contact 414-257-7222.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on weight.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
WeSaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and
You are listening to WAE.